From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And so we have leaders within the Sacramento region come in and share their stories in an effort to inspire, to educate, get you connected with what's going on in the Sacramento region, the greater Sacramento region, so that you can help decide what are you going to do with what you got. Because the people of Sacramento have kind of a unique characteristic, is it's good people. A lot of people have described us as more of like the Midwest of California. And today on the show, I've got Ken Monroe, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, super successful. He is the CEO of HOC Holdings, which I know part of that is Holt of California, which is Caterpillar reseller, among other things. So welcome to the show, Ken. Appreciate you coming on. Again, it's been, we're guessing, like 7 years.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. And thank you for having me.
Yeah,
great to be back. Great to see you.
So let's maybe get just a little bit of your background, maybe a little bit about your business. And then I know you're also a leader within the Family Business Association of our region, and California Family Business, right. And a little bit of what you do there and what family businesses are going through these days.
Sure. Well, to be specific, our flagship line is Caterpillar. So as such, we have 16 counties here in Central California, Northern Central California, that we distribute Caterpillar products in. That is the traditional, you see big earth moving bulldozers type equipment, generator sets, forklifts. Then we also rent that same equipment plus anything you want to rent. We also sell ag built equipment, so something that would actually pull a plow or harvest stuff. That's from a brand called AGCO. So they, Massey Ferguson and Fendt are the two brands, and we sell that throughout all of Northern California and Oregon. So we have we take a lot of pride in this area because this is where our whole marketplace is. Right here in Central California, we don't go to the Bay Area. We don't grow outside of our geographic territory. So we're really dedicated to helping grow this greater Sacramento area, because that's how we live and survive.
Yeah, so I would have to think that there's the ag component, which it sounds like it's probably a smaller component. Is the Caterpillar line focused around basically construction and moving dirt?
It is, but a lot of the Caterpillar equipment can be used in ag. So, for example, a wheel loader or a skid steer loader can be in a dairy farm, or they use the biggest Caterpillar dozer made, a D10, D11. They build them for mining. They build them for huge construction. Here in the Central Valley, we use them in ag. They have a big ripper behind them, and they go 6 feet deep, and that's what, when they put in a new almond orchard, they'll go rip the ground to make the water go through. So our customers have adapted some big construction equipment to ag even over the years, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. So what is the, so in these different industries, ag and I guess it'd be development of construction projects, are those industries growing right now? Are they, you know, what's the state of the industry?
In our area, yeah, it seems that way. It's a little hard to get your finger on sometimes, but when we talk, so our customer would be the contractor that's going out and moving dirt. So Tykert would be a name that you'd recognize. You see their green trucks. They're out moving dirt. Their customer would be a developer who's building a land site. So our customers are telling us they've got work for 2025. They seem pretty confident that things are going pretty good. We see still growth here in the valley where people have stopped maybe flying over Sacramento out of the Bay Area, and they're stopping and saying, this is a great place to live. And so we still see some good growth out here.
We recently did a little construction project, a family compound at our place called Haneyville. Kind of looks like a town. And we used Cook Engineering. Mm-hmm. You'd probably know those guys,
Yeah,
Sean Cook.
Yeah.
he's a friend of ours, and so he came out and put in some roads and did some cool stuff, did a bunch of underground type stuff. So, and there was a lot of Caterpillar stuff there.
Glad to hear it.
So it was good. So yeah, I got, I think I even got to sit in one time. Yeah, they wanted me to operate it. I'm like, no, I don't want to break anything. So. No,
so if you ever want to come out and dig a hole and fill it up, we'll be happy to host you back there. It's great, great stress reliever.
Nice. Yeah.
You'll have fun with it.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So the state of the industry is good. And how many employees do you have now?
We're about 900.
900 total. Employees. And when you came on the show last, let's say it was 2017.
Yeah. Probably about 600.
So you've grown quite a bit since then.
Yeah, it has been growing. Now, we expanded. We purchased the territory up in Oregon for ag 5-6 years ago now. That expanded a little bit, more than our normal little here in the Central California. But we've just experienced growth. Our rental business has grown, and the tractor business as a whole was actually, through COVID, we continued to grow.
Last time I talked to you, I believe you were the largest Caterpillar dealer in some geographic area. Was that California or was that worldwide?
No, we're not even close.
Okay.
We're the largest Caterpillar dealer in the greater Sacramento area.
Okay.
So there are four Cat dealers in California. Us, then there's a company called Peterson that has the Bay Area and North, a company called Quinn from Fresno down to LA, and then a company called Hawthorne, which is, has San Diego and Hawaii.
Okay.
Only 42 dealers in all of the U.S.
So those geographic dealers, you're not allowed to sell into their territories and vice versa? How does that work?
You can, but if we sold a new machine in somebody else's territory, we either have to pay them to take care of the warranty or we do. Mm-hmm. And our goal as a Caterpillar dealer is to make sure somebody's always up and running. And it's easier to take care of customers that are in your backyard. So we all focus on growing our business within our territories because that's how we best serve our customers.
Yeah. Seems like it creates more of a team atmosphere too among dealers.
We're still competitors.
Okay.
But if you, John Deere would be our biggest competitor, and a company called Komatsu, big manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Globally, they're Caterpillar's biggest competitor in the tractor business.
Who's the biggest between the three of you? Which company's the biggest? Caterpillar's the biggest, right?
Caterpillar's the biggest, yeah. Worldwide manufacturing. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you hear John Deere too on the news here and there, but you hear Caterpillar is almost like kind of like a benchmark for how the real estate industry is expected to go.
Well, that and the mining is big for them, so a lot of that drives their business globally, and it's sometimes hard to relate our business to their business because they're driven globally. So they could have great things going on in the rest of the world and it's slow here or vice versa. Doesn't always, we're not always matching what they're doing.
One of the things that you and I were talking about before the show a little bit is these companies that we're investing into the Growth Factory, and they're basically all tech companies, heavy in AI, some robotics companies. I have to imagine Caterpillar has got automation being driven throughout these, these tractors and these pieces of equipment that move dirt, like they're autonomous stuff or semi-autonomous stuff?
It's semi-autonomous stuff. They probably have something running in some back place that we never get to see, but semi-autonomous, where you actually we could sit here and run a machine in Nevada or run a machine in Peoria, Illinois, where Caterpillar has their test grounds. For safety reasons, what they're going down that road for. The other thing, they've had a joint venture with a company called Trimble, which is a technology company. So we represent Trimble, the Trimble brand, and we also represent Caterpillar, and then they put stuff together and it goes on machines. So where, if you know what a motor grader is, but you'd see somebody doing a really fine grade on a road someplace. That used to be the top paid guy running that, and honestly, there was about 10 levers. These guys had hands that I think by the time they were 55, their hands, the arthritis, they could cut down to like an eighth of an inch. Now that machine, that operator's real main goal is to not let it go off a cliff. It's all run by satellite GPS. You put in what you want it, the grade to be, and that machine will run itself in running that blade. So they've done pretty remarkable things in terms of how that machine runs and what an operator has to do and not have to do. And part of that's driven by just finding good operators. There are just not as many people around, and it drives technology to look for other ways.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you think about this, people worry about automation killing jobs, but in reality, some of these industries, it's really difficult to get good operators or good employees that have those kind of skills.
That's our biggest challenge, is finding technicians. So there's not enough journeyman technicians out there right now, unless you go stealing from each other, and that's a no win, no growing. So we've got a lot of different programs trying to get those kids who maybe don't want to be in a textbook, don't want to go to college, but love to work with their hands, really good at that type of stuff. We're trying to get them into our sphere of technology and learn more about it. And some of our older guys will say, you know, I used to go out on a job site and I might carry a laptop when they first got stolen. The guy'd say, get that dang laptop out of here. You know, get your tools and get to work. He says, now I go out there and they say, where's your laptop? I'm not going to let you on here unless you can diagnose this thing with your laptop. Right. So we've seen a big turnaround in that regard too.
Oh yeah, I can only imagine. So now your business is a family business.
It is.
And it's been around for a long time. Can you give me a reminder on where you started and then what's happened in terms of family and the family business side of things?
It's a little complicated family business, okay. But I'll try to make it succinct.
Dumb it down for me.
it's not. So there's three families that own it.
Okay.
One of the families is the Beatty family. They had a dealership up here out of Marysville and kind of the Sacramento area. Then there was a family called the Holtz down in Stockton. My dad was an employee of the Holtz, and in the mid-80s had an opportunity to buy in when the Holtz retired. So one of the Holtz son-in-law and my dad became partners. And 25, 26 years ago, we merged the two companies to be an ongoing entity. For us, it was it put us into a relatively mid-sized Caterpillar dealer. We take care of our customers better and hopefully grow the business and keep the business for a long time. So the three families are still in the business. There are two of the families have people actually working in the business. Ryan Beatty from the Beatty side, his great-grandfather started at his Marysville Tractor in 1931. You talk about an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. This guy was a banker in Stockton where Caterpillar was actually at the time. And the Caterpillar guy said, hey, we got this dealership that's failing up in Marysville. You know anybody who might take it? And he said, I will. So in the middle of the recession, this guy goes in and takes on
in the middle of the Great Depression.
Great Depression. Yeah.
Wow.
I know. So that takes some guts. So he got it started. The Holtz were started in 39, actually, down in the Stockton area. And the interesting twist of that, Caterpillar was actually invented in Stockton. Benjamin Holt, if you've ever driven down I-5 and you see Benjamin Holt Drive,
okay,
he's the guy in 1904 that mastered those tracks. He figured out how to make those tracks work in Stockton. And the company was called Holt Manufacturing. The name came from what they said. He was out showing a reporter this tractor moving, and the guy said, that looks like a caterpillar crawling across the ground. Hmm. There's that. So no marketing group, no checking out all the name. That was the name Caterpillar. And then in 1925, Holt Manufacturing and a company called Best, which was originally out of Woodland and then had moved to San Leandro, merged and changed the name to Caterpillar, and then eventually moved their headquarters to Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
So
are those tracks the same ones that they would use on a tank or
yeah,
similar
absolutely.
To that? Like during World military?
War, during World War I, Holtz, one of their biggest customers, was selling to the British and to the U.S. for the tracks for tanks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. It started out of area.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a really cool story. Okay. So now there's only two family members really in operating the business now as part of the.
Well, there's three family members. I'm active in it.
Okay.
Ryan, my successor, is active in it. My son joined us about 4 years ago. I have a daughter who was with us. She's now raising children mm-hmm. on our board. And then a gentleman named Charlie Wyckoff, who was my dad's partner's son, who's on our board also. Not day-to-day, but on the board. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now that group of people is led by you. You're the CEO of that team.
That's what I tell them. I'm not sure that's what happens. But
so you've developed the succession plan. And I'm kind of wondering, I've had family businesses on the show before, even somewhat recently, and there's been a little bit of family drama over how the succession plan, got carried out.
Yeah.
How has it gone for you guys? And I mean, is there any words of wisdom there?
Well, it's coming from me, so question the wisdom part. But probably one of the things that I have discovered, and I never thought I would need to, was using a little outside help. Hmm. I kind of figured we can handle this. We can get together and take care of things. Over the years, when you get into those emotional discussions, who's going to do what, where does this go, having a third party who's kind of disinterested, been through this before, knows some good questions, kind of hold hands, gives you a sense of where to go and maybe how to get there, makes a huge difference in getting things done in a manner that you otherwise could turn kind of dicey.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your business, does the CEO, is he or she the visionary? Do those people have to be good with the numbers, leading people? What are the kind of things that are important for, I guess, that next person in your world?
Yeah, a little bit of all that.
Okay.
That's part of the transition, is we're much bigger than we were when I took over. So it's a different animal. I'm kind of looked at sometimes like, he's a little limited in all the different things you need. So in some cases, technology-wise, probably they're bringing more to the game than I would have thought about bringing to the game. But yeah, you need to have a little vision where you're going, what the organization looks like, how we're going to grow our market share, how we're going to take care of our customers, challenging the people around them to do that. For us, it's more about executing. It's more about making sure that customer's machine's running every day, right, and keeping everybody motivated to do that, than it is being a great visionary. I mean, we get a lot of our product from Caterpillar. They're the ones looking at the marketplace saying, what new machine or what do we need to do technology-wise to make it right? They'll take feedback from us when we have customers who are demanding something or asking for something. But our job is to really make sure that customer's running right, that everything that's been built out there breaks. Our job's to fix it and keep it running. Mm-hmm. So that's the skill level that they have to have. Be knowledgeable of that, mechanically inclined, at least enough to have a conversation with somebody about it.
Well, okay, so you've got this board of directors, and it sounds like there are family members from the three families on the board. Did you bring in outside members for the board?
We haven't. It's a continual conversation, and we still haven't. Our board now is probably a learning board. They're the next generation. So part of this is getting them exposed to the business and all the intricacies of what they have to deal with as board members and as employees. So we've not ever brought in an outside board member or two to talk about what to do next.
I wonder about the feeling of responsibility, not just with you, you've been doing this a long time, but these family members represent a legacy from their family. Obviously, it's a valuable business, so they want to make sure that the business wins so that it's good for all the shareholders. But I sort of wonder about the enormity of the responsibility when you're basically carrying this 100-year-old legacy around.
Well, if you put it that way, now I'm kind of panicked. I think we just try to think about it day to day, looking a little bit into the future. What do we need to look like? What do we need to do to be successful and not get too overcome by what the past was? I mean, all of our, I look to our past and say, boy, they really gave me the ability to go just do what I think is right. As I transitioned to this role, and there were three previous before me, Ryan's dad, my dad's partner, and my dad. that could have been a lot more advice than I needed. And they did a great job of letting me make my own mistakes or guiding me. And so I'm trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I've learned from the previous generations, and not get too worried about what it's going to look like, or how do we will be around. We just got to make sure that we're doing the right things now to get there. And that's really gets down to taking care of our customers. If our customers aren't successful, then we're not successful. And that philosophy really goes throughout our whole company.
What's the biggest challenge on that front? I wonder, keeping our customers happy is something that all of us need to do. But what's the biggest challenge there for you?
Well, it's multifaceted.
Yeah, because sometimes it's not easy to keep a customer happy.
No. Oh, you've had customers
been there.
Too, huh? Probably the biggest, immediate grind is when somebody's machine goes down and they're in the middle of a job. And the only way they make money is if that machine's up and running. So between getting technicians out there, getting it fixed right, sometimes having to find them a machine that we can rent to them, or in extreme circumstances, loan to them till we can get their machine up and running. Those are the things that throw the biggest curveballs at you at every given day. We really pride ourselves on, if you came into one of our parts counters and said, I need a part for my machine to keep running, 88% of the time we have it right across the counter. And 98% of the time we'll have it to you next day from one of the CAT parts centers. It's one of the things that CAT's done a really good job, and that all the dealers have, keeping that customer running. However, if you needed 10 parts to get your machine running and I got you 9 of them and the last one wasn't there, you're not running. So those types of things are the things that keep everybody on their toes and really up and going day to day to day to day. From a bigger perspective, our fleet is huge. I mean, our rental fleet, our inventory is probably bigger than any of our customers. Managing the capital needed to run those things, keep them up and going, trying to look down the road as interest rates go up and the cost of all that, that's more of the CEO level and the CFO discussions and how we manage that. So the bigger picture that's probably the bigger issue for us, is just a lot of capital.
We've been in a low interest rate environment for the last several years. Now it's ticked up to what some people might describe as normal, but they seem high.
Right.
How is that affecting, my daughter's in the real estate industry, residential real estate, and she's doing well, but I've heard that there's less transactions that have happened last year than maybe like in any other year in recent history. Just a lot less transactions going. I think some of that's because people already have a 3% interest rate, and so they don't really want to sell their house because they want to hang on to that low interest rate. But I sort of wonder how that's going to affect development and even this CapEx spend, people buying more tractors.
It's impacted it less than we thought it would. I mean, same feeling. When interest was basically nothing for a long time, people get used to that. As those rates just jumped up, we expected demand to really die and development around here to really die. And compared to the rest of the country, it doesn't seem like we have dropped off as much as the rest of the country. And our sales for the new equipment are down just a little bit, not even remotely what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So again, I was wrong in my forecast.
Perfect.
But I'm happy about it. So I couldn't give you a logical answer, because theoretically interest rates were there, we should all be cutting way back and not spending as much. But we're seeing not that happen. We're seeing things going pretty strong.
What percentage of the people finance the equipment versus pay cash?
I don't know the answer to that top of my head, but probably 75 to 80%.
Oh, almost everybody finances the equipment because
it's expensive.
I guess it starts, where's it? Like a mini excavator? Is that like one of the cheaper things? Or maybe you got a Bobcat?
Now you said Bobcat.
Oh, is that a different brand? That's not even Caterpillar, is
that's
it?
That's like saying Caterpillar is a bulldozer. So Bobcat's the one who made the little skid steer rotor. They were the ones who did that.
Okay, right.
We compete with them.
Okay.
On the very low end, this was without any attachments, and most of these machines don't work without attachments. Mm-hmm. It's probably $50,000 to $60,000 just to get into a machine. And I'm probably even low on that because of the great inflation that went to everything, also went to those machines. very quickly up to a million and a half for a big dozer, the big scrapers you see out moving dirt. So it's a very expensive operation. And one of the challenges in California with that, gosh, 10, 12 years ago, some of the CARB rules.
The environmental type
rules said you couldn't have a fleet that had an average output of emissions of X. So you had to get rid of your old machines that were the more polluting machines and put in the newer machines. So everybody's had to upgrade their fleets, and that's been a very expensive thing. So people really do have to finance that to get there.
Are the regulations... So I mentioned at the beginning of the show that you are also with the California Family Business Association. Am I saying that correctly?
Family Business Association of California.
California Family Business. Yep. Okay, yep. So I have been, I think I'm a member.
Yeah.
And gone to a few things. And there's a couple of family business associations in town. One is geared toward, I'll call it the softer side of being a family business, some of the transitions and things like that.
Let me define it for you. So I've been in both.
Oh, okay.
One's the Capital Region Family Business Center. Their goal is to help you perpetuate your business. So they're there to help deal with those family issues, thinking about your board and the outside people, and how do I make my business stay in the family and go on. Out of that group, a handful of us started the Family Business Association, which is a politically lobbying firm. One of the things that's not represented at all in the legislature are family businesses. So we all have our association groups, or you belong to the chambers. A lot of overlap, but when we're dedicated to California, a lot of the family businesses there, a lot of farmers, a lot of folks like us, we can't just take our businesses and move someplace else. We're here. Or a lot of the family businesses in California, they just like California, and they're going to stay no matter what the legislature throws at them. And we realize we really need to get in there and fight that battle for the family businesses to say, you know, these are the kinds of things that are driving other businesses out. We want to stay, but we also want to be competitive to the people who are from the out of state side. So that's what the Family Business Association is.
So when you brought up the environmental issues, regulatory environment, is California on the environmental issues a lot tougher than the rest of the country, and are there certain things that John Deere Caterpillar has to do to comply differently in California, or do they do it the same across the globe?
There are things they have to do different in California. Yes, California is different, and it's been a leader in a lot of that. So a lot of the improvements in engines and emissions have come through some of the regulations out of California. Mm-hmm. It's driven technology to get better and cleaner at what they do. So they do have to respond to that and are actively involved with, hey, we can do this, but we can't do that, to the regulators. You know, how do we get better at that? So yes, that's part of the job. And yes, California pushes the envelope in all of those types of things.
What are the biggest challenges that family businesses are facing here in California?
A lot of them are the same as any business. The PAGA lawsuits, you've probably
labor
heard about.
Labor law type stuff, yeah.
Very challenging for a family business. I would say a lot of the regulations in general, we've always tried to be pretty flexible with our employees. I mean, it's a two-way street, and you really want to be as flexible as you can. With a lot of the rules and the regulations in place now, you can't be flexible. In California, if you don't take your lunch at 4 hours and 59 minutes, you can get sued, or you have to pay extra for them to be on. Things like that make it very difficult to say, let's be flexible with our employees. There's not a two-way street. That's probably the biggest challenge, and we could talk about a million different situations mm-hmm. like that. But in general, I just see it as a harder place to be, hey, let's go do this, employees, because there's so many rules you got to play by. And a lot of them started with good intentions, but then they get way overblown, because now you can get sued if you don't follow that exact rule, and that's a lot of dollars going out. And so bottom line is, I don't think employees get treated as fairly as they should be. They're treated more like by the rules.
In family businesses, you hear about people leaving California and that kind of thing. Well, my family is here. In a family business, your family is probably, good chance your family is here as well. So you don't have as much of a, I guess, choice in terms of like where you locate your business, because you know, kids and grandkids, and for you guys, you've got your, this is your territory as well. So, but I have to imagine that family businesses are more rooted in the geography of California than maybe the typical business who can pick up and leave a lot of times.
Absolutely. That's what we see is, a lot of, and their alternative is to sell. And oftentimes when they sell, they will sell to an out-of-state company. That means that out-of-state, that headquarters that used to be here and maybe gave a lot more, now is out-of-state. Mm-hmm. Those are the types of things that we see happening. And it's not that the family business left. It's they sold the business and the family then decides what they want to do. To me, that's just not, that's not a healthy economy to be running. I prefer to have our competitors local and know each other and all the other businesses. But
yeah, it's it feels like the small businesses generally, if they're successful, they grow up and become a little bit bigger businesses or a lot bigger businesses like what yours has. And you're some of the most philanthropic people dumping money, putting money back into the community, whether it be the Little League teams or, you know, investing in the Growth Factory, which is not, you know, we're in business to, you know, succeed, but as everybody is, but you're recirculating the dollars back into the economy, and it's good for everybody. And if you sell, you might have one big paycheck, and then from there, that person might sort of sit on the money, or they might even take their money and move to a state that doesn't have the same tax, you know, consequences.
Incline Village has a lot of folks from California.
Yes, they
yeah,
do.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what the Family Business Association is out fighting for. So we're always looking for family business members to come in so we can, and we've made a pretty good name. We have full-time lobbyists. And they can walk into legislature and talk about family businesses. And a lot of the people in the legislature say, you know, I came from a family business and, you know, I grew up that. My parents worked their tails off and on and on. And then you want to look at them and say, but do you know what you're doing?
Yeah.
In the legislation you're doing now is not going to help them. So trying to educate them on what it really does mean.
Yeah. Have you walked into some of those meetings and
yes.
been a part of those discussions? Because it's, you know, this is not really a show on politics, but your business is, you're advocating for, you know, small business, and that's a political thing. But what's it like to walk in knowing that the most of the people are probably thinking that they're going to not be in favor of, you know, business?
It well, you just have to have some tenacity and keep at it, not get too riled up. I mean, we're nonpartisan. We're not there to go elect one party or the other. We're there to go get family businesses more competitive in the governmental range. And it's not one, I mean, none of us ever really wanted to get into this part of it. But at a certain point, we stepped back and said, you know, if we're not there advocating for ourselves, no one else is. I mean, the chambers do, those type of things do, but they don't always see it through the family business eyes, the way we're structured, the way we want to be here. So we felt like we just needed to get a voice in there, not to get into politics, but just to help keep the playing field level.
Yeah. And so is your, are your lobbyists focused on California only, or do they focus on national issues as well?
Our group is California only. There is a national group who they really focus on mainly tax type things that go on that make a difference for family businesses, all the different structures that are out there. The woman who runs it is actually based in California, but she's got a group in D.C., and they focus on the national stuff. So we're really California.
What are you seeing in terms of a Trump effect?
I don't know, it's kind of all over the place. It was interesting, you know, very specifically, like the day after the election, we had a whole bunch of customers call, and the sales guys were saying, oh my gosh, these guys are buying. Whether that was Trump or just the fact that the election was over and they had some stability.
But it feels like there's a little bit of animal spirits out there.
There's definitely people feeling like, okay, we're kind of got an opportunity to go perform. Let's go perform. We'll see if that lasts or not. But
yeah.
That's what we're feeling, yeah.
What about some of his policies that might affect your industry? Any thoughts?
Well, the tariffs thing certainly could impact a lot of our farming. I mean, the one the one area that is down right now is farming. Most all the commodity prices are down. All of our farmer customers are really struggling.
Interesting, because we're hearing and seeing and feeling at the grocery store that there's a lot of inflation, but the wholesale prices at the grower are down.
The grower level are not keeping up. They are really struggling.
How do you is there a way to explain that? I mean, to a simpleton like me, that like, okay, if it's cheaper when you take it out of the ground, why it's more money at the grocery store? Is it the cost of doing business at the grocery store and transportation and all those kinds of things?
It's a great mystery of egg prices, and I've had a lot of farmers try to explain it to me, and I'm the same way. I'm just simple. How does this work? I mean, they're in a lot of cases, their input costs are gone up. So the cost of fertilizer, the cost of machinery, the cost of all that stuff has gone up. Their commodities are a global, they compete with the globe. So they're challenged when the tariffs come onto place, because we put a tariff stuff coming in, well, then other countries put a tariff for stuff going to them. And a lot of that is our agricultural product. So that could be an impact to them. Definitely immigration is a challenge agriculture-wise, but even in the construction side of things in California, we need a good workforce. And immigration is one of the ways to do that, get people here. I think the challenge has been we have a really lousy system of getting people either as temporary or get a green card. It's a nightmare. We tried, 10 years ago or so, we tried to come up with a program that if, say, some of the South American Caterpillar dealers were slow, we could have some of their guys come up and work in our shops. And we were thinking, so we got a hold of some guys down there, and they were thrilled. They were like, we'll send you our best guys. They could come up, work there for a year, learn English, learn, that'd be great. So then we went to the next route, was to find out what would that take. Now, Caterpillar, being a global company, has a lot of attorneys that focus on immigration and all that. So we got hooked up with one of their attorneys, and about 10 pages of notes later, I'm thinking, there's no way. We're not big enough. We're not going to be able to go influence this. So if we could get some systems in place that would get people some level of legalized and put them to work, I think we'd have a great boon in our workforce, because we do have a shortage of labor. When we talk to some of our customers about construction projects, one of the things that slows them down is they can't get enough labor to go finish the project. So they're having to put things off or slow things down because of that. So that would be another area that, if we could have a more organized border and a more flow of getting people who want to work to work, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the shortage of people who want to work in the trades. Where does the school system come in on that, the high schools specifically, and maybe the junior colleges?
It's getting better.
Okay.
That's one of the areas. I was kind of in the last high school eras in the late 70s where shop class went away. Now people are beginning to realize that that was a mistake. Not everybody's a four-year college person. We've been working with San Joaquin Delta College in Stockton for, going on 20 years, where we have a program. Kids go into their diesel program. They're 8 weeks in school, 8 weeks in one of our shops. They graduate in 2 years with a degree, and they're probably 3 or 4 years ahead of what the old traditional journeyman would have been coming into our place. We have people calling on high schools and even junior high schools to just talk about what they do, take a tour of the place. And those kids who, again, are mechanically inclined, got a lot of work ethic, want to go jump into that, we're starting to find those kids. And the state has now got money allocated to those types of programs. Now, those programs, it ranges anything from nursing to diesel technology. Mm-hmm. But finally, we're getting some monies put into at the high school level and the junior college level so kids can get into some trades.
That's great. It's kind of a... Do you have grandkids?
I do.
How many do you have?
Five.
How many children do you have?
Two.
Two kids, five grandkids. Okay, so I have two kids, seven grandkids, and they range from like 1 year to 14 and a half. And I often wonder what their careers will look like and what I will do if they want guidance. And because the jobs of today, some of them will be not around in 10 or 15 years. Others of them will be in a big need. And I mean, how do you think about that? And I have to imagine your kids and grandkids come to you as dad with the dad and grandpa with the wisdom.
Yeah. No, again, I don't think they come to me with the wisdom. Well, there's grandpa again. Same boat. My kids, grandkids are from 2 to 10. And, you know, you look at them and think, where are you going to go? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? And we've tried to have a rule in our business where you go work outside for a while, not going to come right into the business, maybe in the summers during high school or college, but go see what it's like to work for somebody else. Go see what it's like to have some other experiences, and then we can talk about coming back into the business. So as a family business, you have a little flexibility that way to maybe give the kids an opportunity. And I won't call it a safety net, because you want them to come back performing. There's not a place for you to just come get a paycheck and go home. You got to perform. And that's where you can learn to perform is at someplace else. So we're trying to help educate them to think about the broader aspects of the world than just come work for the family business.
My children and I have been talking about some of the things that, even though we may not know exactly what jobs are going away first, sometimes it's hard to tell where robotics might come in. And, you know, I own a concrete company, and, you know, I'm thinking, how are we going to pour concrete with a robot? But there are people that are trying to think that through right now.
Right.
Or maybe they're doing it. So we know a lot of that is coming, and it'll happen sort of gradually, and then all of a sudden it'll happen all at once, and it'll just be way better. So how to skate to where the puck is going, it's an interesting question. But one of the things we've been talking about is just focusing on like what we can control, which is attitude, sportsmanship, teamwork, how to think on your own, how to figure stuff out. That kind of stuff never goes out of style. Right. And even though you might have to pivot in your career more in the future because of technology and the speed of change, if that stuff, some of those softer skills of just being resourceful in life and being somebody who works hard and, you know, has some stick-to-itiveness, that won't go out of style.
I don't think so. In fact, that's what's going to drive all of that, is being the willingness to think goes a long ways. And it's amazing how not everybody wants to do that.
It's true.
But if you can find some people who want to, both the exciting and the worrisome part of that is sometimes that thinking gets you down a path where you're like, well, how did we get there? So then you just got to think a little bit about, how do I get back on the right path? But I agree, if we can get those people thinking and excited, and they'll do really well. And in our world, it's definitely changed. Like I said earlier, one of our guys said, you know, I used to go out on the job site with a computer, he threw me out. Now he won't let me on without my computer. So we can diagnose something faster, more accurately, but it still takes a pair of hands to go figure that out, plug that in, and do it. Now, it won't be too far along. In fact, we've got this right now, where the machine actually is telling our folks sitting in a little command center, hey, this machine looks like it's having some problems. There's something going on here that's, if we don't get this fixed, we better get it handled. So we've had some situations where we've gone out and found out maybe it was the way they were operating it. They were having somebody like riding the brakes or not using the right gears, all the way to something's breaking in there, let's get it fixed now. So we're able to be better at what we used to do and provide more service, but it still takes a person to interpret that, to go out and look at the thing. We haven't quite made that leap to this will all be fixed electronically. That's not going to work for us. They're still going to require hands, like plumbers, like contractors, that type of stuff.
So you and I aren't too dissimilar in age, based upon your comment of getting out of high school in the late 70s. I graduated from in 81, which is probably around the same time. And I've been telling myself for the last several years that if you're not growing, you're dying. What does Ken Monroe do to continue to grow as an individual, as a human? Because you still got, with technology, we're probably going to live a lot longer too.
Well, that's an...
We better be growing.
We better be growing. Well, part of it is, for me, it's being a part of a lot of different groups. A lot of informal and more formal organizations that I participate in, which gets you a lot of feedback and a lot of input and a lot of broadening your horizons. Listening to your show, being on your show, to me is a challenging thing. I mean, you're thinking about what am I going to talk about when I get there? How is this going to go? That's pretty exciting. I have always been a reader, love to read. So that always, to the chagrin sometimes of some of my employees, because I'll bring in 20 different ideas every day and they're looking at me like, you know, we're still working on what you brought in a week ago. And those type of things keep me motivated and going.
Okay, so for our audience and for me, because I like to read as well, mostly what I'm doing is Audible, audiobooks.
Right.
What do you read, and anything that you could recommend, maybe that's more classic or that you've liked, that's helped you over the years, or maybe something you're reading, you know, more recently?
God, I have to get the reading list out. One of the ones that I think a lot of what we do today as a company started with Good to Great, those books, mm-hmm. That kind of laid our foundation 25 years ago. They were kind of out then reading those. That started things. I've just heard of one, I can't think, Psyched Up.
Oh. I don't know that one.
I never heard of it either. I saw a little review of it, or I saw the author interviewed. It's about a 7-year-old book. And it kind of hit my hot spot. It was really about how do people live up to their most. And it talks a lot about athletes and actors and people who perform, but it also started talking about salespeople, or if you're going to be asked to be on the Mark Haney Store, what are you going to do? How do you put yourself in the right mental perspective mm-hmm. to accomplish something? And we're right now going through our book of business saying, you know, we do really well with our existing customers, but how are we going to grow new customers? A lot of our customers have been with us. I mean, their grandfathers were dealing with our grandfathers. Now it's the grandkids that are doing it. So there's a lot of things you get comfortable with. So how do we break that comfort level? And this Psyched Up was an interesting one. I'll get you the author and the title afterwards.
Oh, I love it.
But so those are always interesting to read. But it's always fun to read some of the I don't know, the newest one is Slow Horses. It's a story that I think it's on Apple TV, but it's about the guys in the British CIA. MI5 and 6, who are the washouts.
Oh.
And he writes really hilarious about, it's funny and it's also kind of poignant, and it's fun to read, but I always get something out of it from business standpoint or creative standpoint.
I'm one of those people that reads the same book over and over, or listens to the same book several times. When I get one that sort of resonates with me, I listen to it over and over and over again. One of the books that comes to mind for me that I've listened to a lot of times is a book called Essentialism. It's the disciplined pursuit of less, because I think a lot of us have a tendency to try to attack too many different things at the same time, especially people in entrepreneurship. They chase too many shiny objects, and many times we have to say no and focus, which is not always a strength. And so that's one that comes to mind in terms of ones that I've listened to over and over again. But had you ever listened to books more than one time, or read
absolutely.
Them more than once?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm a slow learner. I'm the slow horse sometimes. So I gotta take them two or three times to get them right. Or if they're just a really good book, and mm-hmm. you know, a year later you're like, I need to read that again. It's yeah, mm-hmm. dude. And I listen to a lot of books too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what else? I'm just kind of having a general conversation with you. It's been fun, but is there anything else that maybe you thought I might touch on that you want to share? Or,
well, actually, the one I was worried about, what your staff was saying was that, yeah, he'd like to talk about your secrets and how you guys.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I thought, well, we don't have any secrets. We just go to work every day and try to do better. Right?
I love it. Okay, so let me set that a little bit. Okay, so I believe everybody. I'll speak for myself. I need a competitive edge, right? I wasn't the biggest guy going out. For the football team, entrepreneurs by and large are underdogs. Many times the deck is not necessarily stacked in our favor. Think about doing business in California. It's not really stacked in our favor per se. So we need to create an advantage. And so I have some things that I think are our advantage, my advantage, but I always try to look to the guests to figure out what their advantage. So I, what I heard was show up every day and go to work. Is there more than that?
Well, there's probably not a secret that we've got in there. You know, it's an interesting industry. So I didn't start in this industry. So I came out of the banking world. And while there's some interesting things there, it's a wide spectrum of people. You can see a lot of industries. Here, when I came to work here, a lot of long-term customers, a lot of people who are really dedicated to what they do, and most everybody we serve is, they're the kind of the backbone of our country. They're doing construction. They're moving product. We sell generator sets that back up hospitals, that back up all the things that you want to keep running. So one of the things that's really interesting about, most of our employees really like that. They really like, I mean, we've got guys who are laying on their backs at midnight during harvest when it's pouring rain, getting the job done because they know that guy's got to go harvest and he needs a machine. That kind of dedication has always been, I've always just been amazed mm-hmm. at how people just rise to the occasion because it's the right thing to do and they like doing it. Nothing that I bring to the table, nothing that, it's just an industry that people gravitate to who really love what they do.
Well, it sounds like a cultural thing within your business. You know, I'm around construction companies all the time and they don't always have that attitude. And so there must be something that you're doing to drive that culture.
Well, I mean, we try to, a part of it is just our history. We've been a long time. We do try to share that history. We have a set of core values we try to share with everybody. And one of the things that during COVID, we really got thrown off in terms of our communication to employees. We're fairly spread out. We don't just have one big office where we can put everybody together. And Zoom doesn't work for a lot of that. And so we kind of got off our rhythm in terms of helping keep the culture tight and going. So again, I go back to people just rose to the occasion. And love what they do, love taking care of their customers, are really proud about coming back and saying, I got that guy working. I got these guys working. I was involved in a paving project that road's now working because I was there helping that guy get that machine going. You see a lot of that pride. And again, trying to keep that going and try to pay people in a manner that they feel like they want to stay with us and keep them the benefits and all that's part of our job. But they really enjoy what they do.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate your humility and, you know, a lot of times I hate to say it starts at the top, but there's a core group of people. It sounds like you had 600 people and now you're at 900. Sometimes that kind of growth can really test the culture, but there's obviously enough of a core and the core values and a way to communicate those that is working.
Yeah, well, and part of that is it's a pro and a con, but like the VPs that run each one of our divisions, half of them started right out of high school with us or with somebody else and came to work for us. So they've spent the bulk of their career with us. They know the ins and outs. They were, you know, they were the guy getting trounced on every night. Now they're the one running it, and they remember that. The downside of that is it's tough to go recruit from the outside sometimes because they don't know our business. We feel like, hey, you don't know us, so we're not going to bring you in. But that probably goes a long ways. We've got an executive staff who really enjoy what they do, and they came up through the ranks. So they like it. They know what people are going through, and there's some empathy there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, I want to thank you for coming on the show, obviously for advocating for family businesses and helping lead that charge. Also for the business that you have built over the last several years and your family has built is really a pillar of, you know, our economy and the fabric of the Sacramento region. So we're really lucky to have you. And so thank you for coming on the show and thank you for what you do.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, at Mark Haney Show, and The Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.